go mad if he did not receive an answer. Devil had lived in the darkness long enough to understand madmen and their obsessions. He shook his head, sending a word of thanks to the gods for making the people of the garden loyal to them.
Ever beyond your reach. You took her from me!
Panic edged into rage.
We took her from the title, Devil said, the one that sickened your father. Your father as well.
Devil ignored the correction.
The title that sickened you, the one that had you ready to kill her.
The Duke looked to the ceiling for a long minute. Then,
I should have killed you. She would have escaped. I should kill you now. You'll never find her then.
A familiar jaw, an echo of their father's, clenched. Eyes went wild, then blank.
Then understand, Devil. I have no interest in keeping my end of the deal. I shall have heirs. I'm a duke. I shall have a wife and child within a year. I shall renege on our deal, unless you tell me where she is.
Devil's own rage flared, his grip tightening on the silver head of his walking stick. He should kill his brother now, leave him bleeding out on the fucking floor, and finally give the Marwick line its due. He tapped the end of his stick on the toe of his black boot.
You would do well to remember that with the information I have about you, Duke. A word of it would have you hanged. Why not use it?
The question was not combative, as Devil would have expected it. It was something like pained, as though Ewan would greet death, as though he would summon it. Devil ignored the realization.
Because toying with you is more diverting.
It was a lie. Devil would have happily destroyed this man, his once brother. But all those years ago, when he and Wit had escaped the Marwick estate and made for London and its terrifying future, vowing to keep Grace safe, they'd made another vow, this one to Grace herself. They would not kill Ewan.
Yes, I think I shall play your silly game, Devil said, standing and tapping his walking stick on the floor twice. You underestimate the power of the bastard son, brother. Ladies love a man willing to take them for a walk in the darkness. I'll happily ruin your future brides, one after another, until the end of time. Without hesitation, you never get an heir.
He approached his brother, coming eye to eye with him.
I took Grace right out from under you, he whispered. You think I cannot take all the others?
Ewan's jaw went heavy with passionate rage.
You will regret keeping her from me. No one keeps Grace from anything. She chose to be rid of you. She chose to run. She didn't trust you to keep her safe, not when she was proof of your darkest secret.
He paused.
Robert Matthew Carrick.
The Duke's gaze blurred at the name, and Devil wondered if perhaps the rumors were true, if Ewan was indeed mad. It would not be a surprise, with the past that haunted him, that haunted them all. But Devil didn't care, and he continued.
She chose us, Ewan, and I shall make certain that every woman you ever court does the same. I shall ruin every one of them, with pleasure, and in doing so, I shall save them from your mad desire for power. You think you haven't the same desire? You think you did not inherit it from our father? They call you the kings of Covent Garden. Power and money and sin surround you.
Devil smirked.
Every bit of it earned, Ewan. Stolen, I think you mean. You would know a thing or two about stolen futures, about stolen names. Robert Matthew Carrick, Duke of Marwick. A pretty name for a boy born in a Covent Garden brothel.
The Duke's brow lowered, his eyes turning dark with clarity.
Then let it begin, brother, as it seems I've already been gifted a fiancée. Lady Felicia Fairhaven, or Fiona Farthing, or some other version of a stupid name.
Felicity Faircloth. That's what the horse's asses on the balcony had called her, before they'd shred her to bits, forced her hand, and inspired her to claim a ducal fiancé in a fit of outrageous cheek. Devil had watched the disaster unfold, unable to stop her from embroiling herself in his brother's affairs. In his affairs.
If you think to convince me you aren't in the market for hurting women, bringing an innocent girl into this is not the way to do it.
Ewan's gaze found his instantly, and Devil regretted the words. What Ewan seemed to think they hinted at.
I shan't hurt her, Ewan said. I'm going to marry her.
The unpleasant pronouncement grated, but Devil did his best to ignore the sensation. Felicity Faircloth of the silly name was most definitely embroiled now, which meant he had no choice but to engage her. Ewan pressed on.
Her family seems quite desperate for a duke, so desperate that the lady herself simply pronounced us engaged this evening. And to my knowledge, we've never even met. She's clearly a simpleton, but I don't care. Heirs are heirs.
She wasn't a simpleton. She was fascinating, smart-mouthed and curious, and more comfortable in the darkness than he would have imagined, and with a smile that made a man pay attention. It was a pity he'd have to ruin her.
I shall find the girl's family and offer them fortune, title, all of it. Whatever it takes. Bans shall post Sunday, Marwick said calmly,
as though he was discussing the weather.
And they will see us married within the month. Heirs soon on the way.
No one gets back in. Not without a match for the ages. Felicity's words from earlier echoed through Devil.
The woman would be thrilled with this turn of events.
Marriage to Marwick got her what she wanted, a heroine's return to the aristocracy. Except she wouldn't return, because Devil would never allow it, beautiful smile or no. Though the smile might make her ruination all the better. Devil's brows lowered.
You get heirs on Felicity Faircloth over my rotting corpse. You think she will choose Covent Garden over Mayfair?
I want back in. Mayfair was everything Felicity Faircloth wanted. He'd simply have to show her what else there was to see. In the meantime, he threw his sharpest knife.
I think she is not the first woman to risk with me rather than spend a lifetime with you, Ewan.
It struck true. The Duke looked away, back out the window.
Get out!
Chapter 4 Felicity sailed through the open door of her ancestral home, ignoring the fact that her brother was at her heels. She paused to force a smile at the butler, still holding the door. Good evening, Irving.
Good evening, my lady,
the butler intoned, closing the door behind Arthur and reaching for the Earl's gloves.
My lord.
Arthur shook his head.
I'm not staying, Irving. I'm only here to have words with my sister.
Felicity turned to meet the brown gaze identical to her own.
Now you'd like to speak. We rode home in silence.
I wouldn't call it silence.
Oh, no.
No, I'd call it speechlessness.
She scoffed, yanking at her gloves, using the movement to avoid her brother's eyes and the hot guilt that thrummed through her at the idea of discussing the disastrous evening that had unfolded.
Good God, Felicity, I'm not sure there's a brother in Christendom who'd be able to find words in the wake of your audacity.
Oh, please, I told a tiny lie.
She made for the staircase, waving a hand through the air and trying to sound as though she weren't as horrified as she was.
Plenty of people have done far more outrageous things. It's not as though I took up work in a bordello.
Arthur's eyes bugged from their sockets.
A tiny lie.
Before she could reply, he added.
And you shouldn't even know the word bordello.
She looked back, the two steps she'd already taken putting her above her twin.
Really?
Really.
I suppose you think that it isn't proper, me knowing the word bordello.
I don't think, I know.
And stop saying bordello. Am I making you uncomfortable?
Her brother narrowed his brown gaze on hers.
No, but I can see you wish to, and I don't want you to offend Irving.
The butler's brows rose. Felicity turned to him.
Am I offending you, Irving?
No more than usual, my lady,
the older man said, all seriousness. Felicity gave a little chuckle as he took his leave.
I'm happy one of us is still able to find levity in our situation.
Arthur looked to the great chandelier above and said,
Good God, Felicity! and they were returned to where they begun, guilt and panic, and not a small amount of fear coursing through her.
I didn't mean to say it. Her brother shot her a look.
Bordello? Oh, now it's you who are jesting. He spread his hands wide.
I don't know what else to do.
He stopped, then thought of more to say. The obvious thing.
How could you possibly think?
I know, she interrupted.
No, I don't think you do. What you've done is...
I know, she insisted.
Felicity, you told the world that you're marrying the Duke of Marwick.
She was feeling rather queasy. It wasn't the world.
No, just six of the biggest gossips in it.
None of whom like you, I might add, so it's not as though we can silence them. The reminder of their distaste for her was not helping her roiling innards. Arthur was pressing on, however, oblivious.
Not that it matters. You might as well have shouted it from the orchestra's platform for the speed with which it tore through that ballroom. I had to hide out of there before Marwick sought me out and confronted me with it. Or worse, before he stood up in front of all assembled and called you a liar.
It had been a terrible mistake. She knew, but they'd made her so angry, and they'd been so cruel, and she'd felt so alone.
I didn't mean to...
Arthur sighed, long and heavy with an unseen burden.
You never mean to.
The words were soft, spoken almost at a whisper, as though Felicity weren't supposed to hear them, or as though she weren't there. But she was, of course. She might always be.
Arthur, you didn't mean to get yourself caught in a man's bedchamber.
I didn't even know it was his bedchamber. It had been a locked door, above stairs at a ball that had broken her heart. Of course, Arthur would never understand that. In his mind, it was brainless. And perhaps it had been. He was on to something else now.
You didn't mean to turn down three perfectly fine offers in the ensuing months.
Her spine straightened. Those she had meant. They were perfectly fine offers if you liked the aging or the dull-witted.
They were men who wanted to marry you, Felicity.
No, they were men who wanted to marry my dowry. They wanted to be in business with you, she pointed out. Arthur was a great business mind and could turn goose feathers into gold.
One of them even told me that I could remain living here if I liked.
Her brother's cheeks were going ruddy.
And what would have been wrong with that?
She blinked.
With living apart from my husband in a loveless marriage?
Please, he scoffed.
Now we are at love. You might as well carry yourself up to the damn shelf.
She narrowed her gaze on him.
Why? You have love?
Arthur exhaled harshly.
That's different.
Several years ago, Arthur had married Lady Prudence Featherstone in a renowned love match. Prue was a girl who'd lived on the dilapidated estate next door to the country seat of Arthur and Felicity's father, and all of London sighed when they referred to the brilliant young Earl of Grout, heir to a marquisate, and his impoverished lovely bride, who'd immediately delivered her besotted husband an heir and was currently at home awaiting the birth of his spare. Prue and Arthur adored each other, in that unreasonable way that no one believed existed until one witnessed it. They never argued, they enjoyed all the same things, and they were often found together on the edges of London's ballrooms, preferring the company of each other to the company of anyone else. It was nauseating, really. But it wasn't so impossible, was it?
Why? Because I've known Prue for my whole life, and love doesn't come along for everyone.
He paused, then added,
and even when it does, it comes with its own collection of challenges.
She tilted her head at the words. What did they mean?
Arthur?
He shook his head, refusing to answer.
The point is, you're 27 years old, and it is time for you to stop dithering about and get yourself married to a decent man. Of course, now you've made it near impossible.
But she didn't want any old husband. She wanted more than that. She wanted a man who could... She didn't even know. A man who could do more than marry her and leave her alone for the rest of her life, certainly. Nevertheless, she did not want her family to suffer for her wild actions. She looked down at her hands and told the truth.
I'm sorry. Your contrition isn't enough.
The response was sharp, sharper than she would have expected from her twin brother, who had stood with her since the moment they were born. Since before that, she found his brown gaze, eyes she knew so well because they were hers as well, and she saw it. Uncertainty. No, worse. Disappointment. She took a step down toward him. Arthur, what's happened? He swallowed and shook his head.
It's nothing. I thought perhaps we had a shot.
At the Duke? Her eyes were wide with disbelief. We did not, Arthur. Not even before I said what I did.
At?
He paused, serious. At a proper match.
And was there a team of gentlemen clamoring to meet me tonight?
There was Matthew Binghamton. She blinked. Mr. Binghamton is deadly dull.
He's rich as a king, Arthur offered.
Not rich enough for me to marry him, I'm afraid. Wealth does not purchase personality. When Arthur grumbled, she added, Would it be so bad for me to remain a spinster? No one will blame you for my being unmarriageable. Father is a Marquis of Bumble, and you're an earl and an heir. We can do without a match, no?
While she was wholly embarrassed by what had happened, there was a not small part of her that was rather grateful that she'd ended the charade. He looked as though he was thinking of something else, something important.
Arthur? There was also Friedrich Homrichhausen.
Friedrich. Felicity tilted her head, confusion flaring. Arthur, Herr Homrichhausen arrived in London a week ago, and he doesn't speak English.
He didn't seem to take issue with that.
It did not occur to you that I might take issue with it, as I do not speak German. He lifted one shoulder.
You could learn.
Felicity blinked. Arthur, I haven't any desire to live in Bavaria.
I hear it's very nice. Homrichhausen is said to have a castle.
He waved a hand.
Turreted.
She tilted her head. Am I in the market for turrets?
You might be.
Felicity watched her brother for a long moment, something teasing about the edges of thought, something she could not put voice to, so she settled on. Arthur? Before he could reply, a half dozen barks sounded from above, followed by,
Oh dear, I take it the ball did not go as planned.
The question carried down from the first floor railing on the heels of three long-haired dachshunds, the pride of the Marchioness of Bumble, who, despite having a red nose from the cold that had kept her at home, stood in perfect grace, wrapped in a beautiful wine-coloured dressing gown, silver hair down about her shoulders.
Did you meet the Duke?
She didn't, as a matter of fact, Arthur said. The Marchioness turned a disappointed gaze on her only daughter.
Oh, Felicity, that won't do. Dukes don't grow on trees, you know.
They don't. Felicity brazened through her reply, willing her twin quiet as she worked to fend off the dogs that were now up on their back legs, pawing at her skirts.
Down! Off!
You are not as amusing as you think, her mother continued, ignoring the canine assault going on below.
There is perhaps one duke available a year. Some years no dukes at all, and you've already missed your chance at last year's.
The Duke of Haven was already married, Mother.
You needn't say it as though I don't remember, her mother pointed out. I should like to give him a firm talking to for how he courted you, without ever intending to marry you.
Felicity ignored the soliloquy, which she'd heard a 4,000 times before. She would never have been sent to compete for the Duke's hand, if not for the fact that other husbands weren't exactly clamoring to have her. So she didn't much mind that he'd chosen to remain married to his wife. Aside from the fact that she quite liked the Duchess of Haven, she'd also learned a piece of critical information about the institution of marriage, that a man wildly in love made a remarkable husband. Not that a wildly in love husband was in Felicity's cards. That particular ship had sailed tonight. Well, it had sailed months ago, if she were honest. But tonight was really the last nail in the coffin.
I'm mixing metaphors.
What? Arthur snapped.
You're what? Her mother repeated.
Nothing. She waved a hand.
I was speaking aloud.
Arthur sighed. For heaven's sake, Felicity, that certainly won't help you land the Duke, said the Marchioness.
Mother, Felicity isn't landing the Duke.
Not with that attitude, she won't, her mother retorted. He invited us to a ball. All of London thinks he's looking for a wife, and you are daughter to a marquis, sister to an earl, and have all your teeth.
Felicity closed her eyes for a moment, resisting the urge to scream, cry, laugh, or do all three.
Is that what dukes are looking for these days? Possession of teeth?
It's part of it, the Marchioness insisted, her panicked words devolving into a ragged cough. She brought a handkerchief to cover her mouth.
Drat this cold, or I could have made the introduction myself.
Felicity sent a quiet prayer of thanks to whichever god had delivered a cold to Bumblehouse 2 days earlier, or she would have no doubt been forced into dancing or some kind of ratafia situation with the Duke of Marwick. No one even liked ratafia. Why it was at every ball in Christendom was beyond Felicity's ken.
You could not have made the introduction, Felicity said. You've never met Marwick.
No one has, because he's a hermit and a madman, if the gossip is to be believed.
No one believes gossip.
Mother, everyone believes gossip. If they didn't... She paused while the Marchioness sneezed.
God bless you. If God wished to bless me, he'd get you married to the Duke of Marwick.
Felicity rolled her eyes.
Mother, after tonight, if the Duke of Marwick were to show any interest in me, it would be a clear indication that he is indeed a madman, rattling around in that massive house of his, collecting unmarried women and dressing them in fancy dress for a private museum.
Arthur blinked.
That's a bit grim.
Nonsense, her mother said. Dukes don't collect women.
She paused.
Wait. After tonight?
Felicity went silent.
Arthur, her mother prodded. How was the evening, otherwise?
Felicity turned her back on her mother and gave her brother a wide-eyed, pleading look. She couldn't bear having to recount the disastrous evening to her mother. For that, she required sleep, and possibly laudanum.
Uneventful, wasn't it, Arthur?
What a pity, the Marchioness said.
Not a single additional bite.
Additional, Felicity repeated.
Arthur, are you too looking for a husband?
Arthur cleared his throat.
No.
Felicity's brows rose.
No to whom?
No to mother.
Oh, the Marchioness said from far above. Not even Binghamton. Or the German.
Felicity blinked.
The German. Herr Homrichhausen.
He's said to have a castle,
the Marchioness said before dissolving into another coughing fit, followed by a chorus of barks. Felicity ignored her mother, keeping her attention on her brother, who did all he could to avoid looking at her, before finally replying with irritation.
Yes.
The word unlocked the thought that had whispered around Felicity's consciousness earlier.
They are rich.
Arthur cut her a look.
I don't know what you mean.
She looked up at her mother.
Mr. Binghamton, Herr Homrichhausen, the Duke of Marwick.
She turned to Arthur.
Not one of them is a good match for me, but they are all rich.
Really, Felicity, ladies do not discuss the finances of their suitors, the Marchioness cried,
the dachshunds barking and frolicking around her like fat little cherubs.
Except they're not my suitors, are they? She asked,
understanding flaring as she turned an accusatory gaze on her brother.
Or if they were, I ruined that tonight.
The Marchioness gasped at the words.
What did you do this time?
Felicity ignored the tone, as though it was expected that Felicity would have done something to cause any eligible suitors to flee. The fact that she'd done precisely that was irrelevant. The relevant fact was this. Her family was keeping secrets from her.
Arthur?
Arthur turned to look up at their mother, and Felicity recognized the frustrated plea in his eyes from their childhood, as though she'd nicked the last cherry tart, or she was asking to follow him and his friends out onto the pond for the afternoon. She followed his look to where her mother stood on watch from high above, and for a moment she wondered about all the times they'd stood in this exact position, children below and parent above,
like Solomon, waiting for a solution to their infinitesimal problems. But this problem was not infinitesimal. If the helplessness on her mother's face was any indication, this problem was larger than Felicity had imagined. "What's happened?" Felicity asked, before shifting to stand directly in front of her brother. "No, not to her. I'm at the center of it, obviously, so I'd like to know what's happened."
"I could ask the same thing," her mother said from up on high.
Felicity did not look as she called up to the Marchioness.
"I told all of London I was marrying the Duke of Marwick."
"You what?"
The dogs began to bark again, loud and frenzied, as their mistress succumbed to another coughing fit. Still, Felicity did not look away from her brother.
"I know, it's terrible. I've caused a fair bit of trouble. But I'm not the only one, am I?"
Arthur's guilty gaze found hers, and she repeated, "Am I?" He took a deep breath and exhaled, long and full of frustration.
"No."
"Something's happened." He nodded. "Something to do with money." And again.
"Felicity, we don't discuss money with men."
"Then by all means, Mother, you should leave, but I intend to have this conversation." Arthur's brown eyes met hers. "Something to do with money." He looked away toward the back of the house, where down a dark corridor a narrow staircase climbed to the servants' quarters. 2 dozen others slept, not knowing their fate was in the balance. Just as Felicity had done, every night before now when her brother, whom she loved with her full heart, nodded a final time and said,
"We haven't any."
She blinked, the words at once expected and shocking.
"What does that mean?"
Frustration flared, and he turned away, running his fingers through his hair before turning back to her, arms wide.
"What does it sound like? There's no money."
She came down off the staircase, shaking her head.
"How is that possible? You're Midas."
He laughed, the sound utterly humorless.
"Not any longer."
"It's not Arthur's fault,"
the Marchioness of Bumble called down from the landing.
"He didn't know it was a bad deal. He thought the other men were to be trusted."
Felicity shook her head. "A bad deal?"
"It wasn't a bad deal," he said softly. "I wasn't swindled. I simply..."
She stepped toward him, reaching for him, wanting to comfort him. And then he added,
"I never imagined I'd lose it."
She reached for him, taking his hands in hers. "It shall be fine," she said quietly.
"So you've lost some money?"
"All the money."
He looked at their hands entwined.
"Christ, Felicity. Prue can't know."
Felicity didn't think her sister-in-law would care one bit if Arthur had made a bad investment. She offered him a smile.
"Arthur, you're heir to a marquisate. Father will help you while you restore your business and your reputation. There are lands, houses. This shall right itself."
Arthur shook his head. "No, Felicity. Father invested with me. Everything is gone. Everything that wasn't entailed."
Felicity blinked, finally turning up to her mother, who stood, one hand to her chest, and nodded.
"Everything? When?"
"It's not important."
She spun on her brother.
"As a matter of fact, I think it is. When?"
He swallowed.
18 months ago."
Felicity's jaw dropped. 18 months. They'd lied to her for 1.5 years. They'd worked to wed her to a collection of less than ideal men, then sent her off to a ridiculous country house party to throw her lot in with 4 other women who were attempting to woo the Duke of Haven into accepting one of them as his second wife. She should have known then, of course, the moment her mother, who cared for propriety, her dogs, and her children, in that order, had presented the idea of Felicity competing for the hand of the Duke as a sound concept. She should have known when her father allowed it, when her brother allowed it. She looked to him.
"The Duke was rich."
He blinked.
"Which one?"
"Both of them. Last summer's. Tonight's." He nodded.
"And all the others?"
"They were rich enough."
Blood rushed through her ears. I was to marry one of them. He nodded. And that marriage was to have filled the coffers. That was the idea.
They'd been using her for a year and a half, making plans without her knowing. For a year and a half, she'd been a pawn in this game. She shook her head.
How could you not have told me the goal was marriage at any cost? Because it wasn't. I wouldn't marry you to just anyone.
She heard the hesitation at the end of the statement.
However, he sighed and waved a hand. However,
she heard the unspoken words that followed. We needed the match. No money.
What of the servants?
He shook his head.
We've cut the staff everywhere but here.
She shook her head and turned to her mother.
All those excuses, the myriad reasons we did not take to the country.
We did not wish to worry you, her mother replied.
You were already so...
forlorn, finished, forgotten. Felicity shook her head.
And the tenants, the hard-working people who worked the land in the country, who relied upon the title to provide, to protect.
They keep what they make now, Arthur replied. They trade for their own livestock. They mend their own homes.
Protected now, but not by the title to which the land was tethered. No money. Nothing that would protect the land for future generations. For the tenants' children. Arthur's young son and the second on the way. For her own future, if she did not marry. We cannot afford another scandal. Arthur's words echoed through her again, unbidden, with new literal meaning. It was the 19th century, and bearing a title did not ensure the lifestyle it once did. There were impoverished aristocrats everywhere in London, and soon the Faircloth family would be added to their ranks. It was not Felicity's fault, but somehow it felt entirely so.
And now they shan't have me, Arthur looked away, ashamed.
Now they shan't have you.
Because I lied.
What would possess you to tell such a stunning lie? Her mother called down, breathless with panic.
I imagine the same thing that would possess you both to keep such a stunning secret, Felicity said, frustration coursing through her.
Desperation.
Anger, loneliness, a desire to shape the future without thought of what might come next. Her twin met her eyes, his gaze clear and honest.
It was a mistake.
She lifted her chin, hot rage and terror flooding her.
Mine as well. I should have told you. There are many things we both should have done.
I thought I could spare you,
he began, and Felicity held up a hand to stop his words.
You thought you could spare you. You thought you could save yourself from having to tell your wife, whom you are supposed to love and cherish, the truth of your reality. You thought you could save yourself the embarrassment.
Not just embarrassment. Worry. I am her husband. I am to care for her, for them all.
A wife, a child, another on the way. A pang of sorrow thrummed through Felicity, a thread of empathy tinged with her own disappointment, her own fear, her own guilt at behaving too rashly, at speaking too loudly, at making too much of a mistake. In the silence that followed, Arthur added,
I should not have thought to use you.
No, she said, angry enough not to let him off the hook.
You shouldn't have.
He gave another humorless laugh.
I suppose I've gotten what's coming. After all, you're not going to marry a rich duke, or anyone rich for that matter, and you shouldn't have to lower your expectations.
Except now Felicity had told an enormous lie and ruined any chance of her expectations being met. And, in the balance, ruined any chance of her family's future being secure. No one would have her now. Not only was she stained by her past behavior, she had lied, publicly, about marriage to a duke. No man in his right mind would find that a forgivable offense. Farewell, expectations.
Expectations aren't worth the thoughts wasted on them if we haven't a roof over our heads.
The Marchioness sighed, as though she could read Felicity's thoughts from above.
Good heavens, Felicity, what would actually possess you?
It doesn't matter, Mother,
Arthur interjected before Felicity could speak. Arthur, always protecting her, always trying to protect everyone, the idiot man.
You're right, the Marchioness sighed. I suppose he's disabused the entire ton of the notion at this point, and we are returned to our rightful place of scandal.
Likely so, Felicity said, guilt and fury and frustration at confusing war in her gut. After all, as a female, she had a singular purpose at times like this, to marry for money and return honor and wealth to her family. Except no one would marry her after tonight. At least no one in his right mind. Arthur sensed her distaste for the direction of the conversation, and he set his hands on her shoulders, leaning in to press a chaste fraternal kiss to her forehead.
We shall be fine, he said firmly. I shall find another way.
She nodded, ignoring the prick of tears threatening, knowing that 18 months had gone by, and the best solution Arthur had had was her marriage. Go home to your wife. He swallowed at the words, at the reminder of his pretty, loving wife, who knew nothing of the mess into which they'd all landed. Lucky Prudence. When Arthur was able to find his voice, he whispered.
She can't know.
The fear in his words was palpable. Horrible. What a mess they were in. Felicity nodded. The secret is ours. When the door closed behind him, Felicity lifted her skirts. Skirts on a gown from last season, altered to accommodate changes in fashion rather than given away and replaced with something fresh. How had she not realized? She climbed the stairs, the dogs weaving back and forth in front of her. When she reached the landing, she faced her mother. Your dogs are trying to kill me. The Marchioness nodded, allowing the change of topic.
It's possible. They are very clever.
Felicity forced a smile. The best of your children.
Less troubles and all the rest, her mother replied, leaning down and collecting one long, furry animal in her arms. Was the Duke very handsome?
I barely saw him in the crush, but it seemed so. Without warning, Felicity found herself thinking of the other man, the one in the darkness, the one she only wished she'd seen. He'd seemed magical, like an invisible flame, but if tonight had taught her anything, it was that magic was not real. What was real was trouble.
All we wanted was a proper match.
Her mother's words cut into her thoughts. Felicity's lips twisted.
I know. Was it as bad as it sounds?
You didn't escape us. We exited you. Finished Felicity, forgotten Felicity, forlorn Felicity.
You are too late for the Duke. I've already landed him.
Felicity nodded. It was worse. She made her way through the dark hallways to her bedchamber. Entering the dimly lit room, she tossed her gloves and reticule on the small table just inside the door, closing it and pressing against it, finally releasing the breath she'd been holding since she'd dressed for the Marwick Ball hours earlier. She crossed to the bed in darkness, tossing herself back on the mattress. She stared at the canopy above for a long moment, replaying the horrifying events of the evening.
What a disaster!
For a fleeting moment, she imagined what she would do if she weren't herself. Too tall, too plain, too old and outspoken. A proper wallflower with no hope of wooing an eligible bachelor. She imagined sneaking from the house, returning to the scene of her devastating crime, winning a fortune for her family and the wide world for herself. Wanting more than she could have. If she weren't herself, she could do it. She could find the Duke and woo him. She could bring him to his knees. If she were beautiful and witty and sparkling. If she were at the center and not the edge of the world. If she were inside the room and not peering through the keyhole. If she could incite passion. The kind she'd seen consume a man, like magic, like fire, like flame. Her stomach flipped with the thought, with the fantasy that came with it. With the pleasure of it, something she'd never let herself imagine. A Duke, desperate for her. A match for the ages.
If only I were flame, she said to the canopy above. That would solve everything. But it was impossible. And she imagined a different kind of flame tearing through Mayfair, incinerating her future. That of her family. She imagined the names. Fibbing Felicity. Falsehood Felicity. For God's sake, Felicity, she whispered. She lay there in shame and panic for a long while, considering her future, until the air grew heavy, and she considered sleeping in her gown rather than summon a maid to help her out of it. But it was heavy and constricting, and the corset was already making it difficult to breathe. With a groan, she sat up, lit the candle on the bedside table, and went to pull the cord to summon the maid. Before she could reach it, however, a voice sounded from the darkness.
You shouldn't tell lies, Felicity Faircloth.
Chapter 5 Felicity leapt straight into the air with a little scream at the words, spinning to face the far side of the room, cloaked in darkness, where nothing looked out of place. Lifting her candle high, she peered into the corners, the light finally touching a pair of perfectly polished black boots, stretched out, crossed at the ankle, the shining silver tip of a walking stick resting atop one toe. It was him. Here, in her bedchamber. As though it were perfectly normal. Nothing about this evening was normal. Her heart began to pound, harder than it had earlier in the evening, and Felicity backed away toward the door. I believe you have the wrong house, sir. The boots didn't move.
I have the right house.
She blinked. You most certainly have the wrong room.
It's the right room as well.
This is my bedchamber.
I couldn't very well knock on the door in the dead of night and ask to speak with you, could I? I'd scandalize the neighbors, and then where would that leave you?
She refrained from pointing out that the neighbors were going to be scandalized in the morning anyway, when all of London knew she'd lied. He heard the thought anyway.
Why did you lie?
She ignored the question. I don't converse with strangers in my bedchamber.
But we aren't strangers, love.
The silver tip of the walking stick tapped the toe of his boot in a slow, even rhythm. Her lips twitched. I have little time for people who lack consequence. Though he remained in the dark, she imagined she could hear his smile.
And tonight you showed it, didn't you, Felicity Faircloth?
I am not the only one who lied. She narrowed her gaze in the darkness. You knew who I was.
You're the only one whose lie is big enough to bring down this house.
She scowled. You have the better of me, Sarah. To what end? Fear?
No, I don't wish to scare you.
The man's voice was heavy like the darkness in which he was cloaked. Low, quiet, and somehow clearer than a gunshot. Felicity's heart thundered. I think that is precisely what you wish to do. That silver tip tapped again, and she turned her irritated gaze to it. I also think you should leave before I decide that instead of fear, I shall feel anger. Pause. Tap, tap. And then he moved, leaning forward into the circle of light so she could see his long legs, four black hat on one thigh. His hands were uncovered by gloves, and three silver rings glinted in the candlelight on the thumb, fore and ring fingers of the right one, beneath the black sleeves of his topcoat, which fit his arms and shoulders perfectly. The ring of light ended at his jaw, sharp and clean-shaven. She lifted her candle once more, and there he was. She inhaled sharply, ridiculously remembering how she'd thought earlier that the Duke of Marwick was handsome. Not any more. For surely, no man on earth should be as handsome as this one. He looked remarkably like his voice sounded, like a low, liquid rumble, like temptation, like sin. One side of his face remained in shadow, but the side she could see, he was magnificent. A long, lean face, all sharp angles and shadowed hollows, dark winged brows and full lips, eyes that glittered with knowledge that she'd wager he never shared, and a nose that would put the royals to shame, perfectly straight, as though it had been crafted with a sharp, sure blade. His hair was dark and shorn close to his head, close enough to reveal the round dome of it. "Your head is perfect," he smirked.
"I've always thought so."
She dropped the candle, returning him to shadows. "I mean, it's a perfect shape. How do you get your hair shaved so close to the scalp?" He hesitated before he answered.
"A woman I trust."
Her brows rose at the unexpected answer. "Does she know you are here?"
"She does not."
"Well, as she takes a blade to your head regularly, you'd best be going before you upset her." A low rumble came at that, and her breath caught. Was it a laugh?
"Not before you tell me why you lied."
Felicity shook her head. "As I said, sir, I do not make a practice of conversing with strangers. Please leave. Out the way you came in." She paused. "How did you come in?"
"You've a balcony, Juliet."
"I've also a bedchamber on the third floor, not Romeo."
"And a sturdy trellis."
She heard the lazy amusement in his words. "You climbed the trellis?"
"I did, as a matter of fact."
She'd always imagined someone climbing that trellis. Just not a criminal come to. What was he here to do? "Then I assume the walking stick is not to aid in movement."
"Not that kind of movement, no."
"Is it a weapon?"
"Everything is a weapon if one is looking for one."
"Excellent advice, as I seem to have an intruder." He tutted at the retort.
"A friendly one."
"Oh, yes," she scoffed. "Friendly is the very first word I would use to describe you."
"If I were going to kidnap you and carry you off to my lair, I would have done it by now."
"You have a lair?"
"As a matter of fact, I do. But I've no intention of bringing you there. Not tonight."
She would be lying if she said the additional qualifier was not exciting. "Ah, that will ensure I sleep well in the future," she said. He laughed, low and soft, like the light in the room.
"Felicity Faircloth, you are not what I expected."
"You say that as though it is a compliment."
"It is."
"Will it still be one when I hit you squarely in the head with this candlestick?"
"You aren't going to hurt me," he said.
Felicity didn't like how well he seemed to understand her bravado was just that. "You seem terribly sure of yourself as someone who does not know me."
"I know you, Felicity Faircloth. I knew you the moment I saw you on that balcony outside Marwick's locked conservatory. The only thing I did not know was the colour of that frock."
She looked down at the dress, a season too old, and the colour of her cheeks. "It's pink."
"Not just pink," he said,
his voice dark with promise, and something else that she did not like.
"It's the colour of the Devon sky at dawn."
She didn't like the way the words filled her, as though she might someday see that sky and think of this man and this moment, as though he might leave a mark she could not erase.
"Answer my question, and I will leave."
"Why did you lie?" "I don't remember it."
"Yes, you do. Why did you lie to that collection of unfortunates?"
The description was so ridiculous that she nearly laughed. Nearly. But he didn't seem to find it amusing. "They aren't so unfortunate.
They are pompous, spoiled aristocrats, with their heads shoved so far up each other's asses. They haven't any idea that the world is quickly moving on, and others will soon take their place."
Her jaw dropped.
"But you, Felicity Faircloth."
He tapped his stick on his boot twice.
"No one is taking your place. And so I will ask again, why did you lie to them?"
Whether it was the shock of his description or his matter-of-fact way of doing the describing, Felicity replied, "No one wishes my place." He did not speak, and so she filled the silence. "By which I mean to say, my place is nothing. It's nowhere. It was once with them, but then..." She trailed off, shrugged. "I am invisible." And then, because she couldn't stop herself, she added softly, "I wanted to punish them, and I wanted them to want me back." She hated the truth in the words. Shouldn't she be strong enough to turn her back on them? Shouldn't she care less? She hated the weakness he'd exposed, and she hated him for exposing it. She waited for him to reply from the darkness, strangely reminded of the time she'd visited the Royal Entomological Society and seen an enormous butterfly trapped in amber. Beautiful and delicate, and perfectly preserved, but frozen in time, forever. This man would not capture her. Not today. I think I shall call a servant to come and take you away. You should know my father is a marquis, and it is quite illegal to enter a home of the aristocracy without permission.
It's quite illegal to enter anyone's home without permission, Felicity Faircloth. But would you like me to tell you, I am duly impressed by your father's title, and your brother's too.
Why should I be the only one who lies tonight? A pause, then.
So you admit it.
I might as well. All of London will know it tomorrow. Flighty Felicity with her fanciful fiancé. The alliteration did not amuse him.
You know, your father's title is ridiculous. Your brother's too.
I beg your pardon, she said, for lack of anything else.
Bumble and grout. Good Lord. When poverty at long last ensnares them, they can always become apothecaries, selling tinctures and tonics to the desperate in Lambeth.
He knew they were impoverished. Did all of London? Was she the last to discover it? The last to be told, even by the family that intended to use her to reverse it? Irritation flared at the thought. The man continued.
And you, Felicity Faircloth, with a name that should be in a storybook.
She cut him a look. I did so wonder about your opinion of our respective names. He ignored her set down.
A storybook princess, locked in a tower, desperate to be a part of the world that trapped her there, to be accepted by it.
Everything about this man was unsettling and strange and vaguely infuriating. I don't like you.
No, you don't like the truth, my little liar. You don't like that I see that your silly wish is false friendship from a collection of poncy-perfumed aristocrats who cannot see what you really are.
She should be a dozen kinds of out of sorts with him so close and in the darkness. And yet... And what is that?
Better by those six by half.
The answer sent a little thrill through her, and she almost allowed herself to be drawn in by this man, who she might be convinced was made of magic with more champagne. Instead, she shook her head and put on her best disdain. If only I were that Princess Syrah, then you would not be here. She moved to the wall, ready to pull the cord again.
Isn't that the bit everyone likes? The bit where the princess is rescued from the tower?
She looked over her shoulder. That's supposed to be a prince doing the rescuing, not whatever you are. She reached for the cord. He spoke before she could pull.
Who is the moth?
She whirled back to him, embarrassment flaring. What?
You wish to be a flame, princess. Who is the moth?
Her cheeks blazed. She hadn't said anything about moths. How did he even know what she had meant? You shouldn't eavesdrop.
I shouldn't be sitting in your dark bedchamber either, love. But here I am.
She narrowed her gaze. I take it you're not the kind of man who pays attention to rules.
Have you known me to follow any of them in our lengthy acquaintance?
Irritation flared. Who are you? Why were you skulking about outside Marwick House like some nefarious... skulker? He remained unroused.
A skulking skulker, am I?
This man, like all of London, seemed to know more than she did. He understood the battleground, had the skill to wage war, and she loathed it. She sent him her most withering look. It had no effect.
Once more, love. If you are the flame... Who is the moth?
Certainly not you, sir.
That's a pity.
She didn't like the insolence in those words either. I feel quite satisfied with the decision. He gave a little laugh, a low rumble that did odd things to her.
Shall I tell you what I think?
I wish you wouldn't, she snapped.
I think your moth is very difficult to lure.
She pursed her lips but did not speak.
And I know I can get him for you.
Her breath caught as he pressed on.
The one whose wings you've already bragged to half of London about singeing.
Felicity was grateful for the dimly lit room, so he couldn't see her red face, or her shock. or her excitement. Was this man, who had somehow found his way into her bedchamber in the dead of night, actually suggesting she had neither ruined her life nor her family's chances for survival? Hope was a wild, panicked thing. Could you get him? He laughed then, low and dark and barely humorous, sending an unwelcome thrill through her.
Like a kitten to the saucer.
She scowled. You should not tease.
When I tease you, love, you shall know it.
He leaned back again, stretching his legs out, tapping that infernal stick against his boot.
The Duke of Marwick could be yours, Felicity Faircloth, and with London never knowing the truth of your lie.
Her breath grew shallow. That's impossible. And still she believed him, somehow.
Is anything truly impossible?
She forced a laugh. Besides an eligible duke choosing me over every other woman in Britain. Tap, 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 tap.
Even that is possible. Old, plain, opinionated, tossed over Felicity Faircloth. This is the bit in the storybook where the princess receives everything she's ever wished for.
Except it wasn't a storybook, and this man couldn't give her what she wished for. That bit typically begins with a fairy of some sort, and you do not seem at all sprightly. A low rumble of a laugh.
There, you are right. But there are creatures other than fairies who dabble in similar trade.
Her heart resumed its pounding, and she hated the wild hope there that this strange man in the darkness could deliver on his impossible promise. It was madness, but she advanced upon him, bringing him into the light once more, moving closer and closer, until she stood at the end of his impossibly long legs, at the end of his impossibly long walking stick, and lifted her candle to reveal his impossibly handsome face once more. This time, however, she could see the whole of it, and the perfect left side did not match the right, where a harsh, wicked scar marked him from temple to jaw, puckered and white. When she inhaled sharply, he turned his head from the light.
A pity. I was looking forward to the set-down you appeared ready to deliver. I didn't think you would be so easily put off.
Oh, I'm not put off at all. Indeed, I'm grateful that you are no longer the most perfect man I've ever seen. He turned back, dark gaze finding hers.
Grateful?
Indeed. I've never quite understood what one does with exceedingly perfect men. A brow rose.
What one does with them?
Besides the obvious. He tilted his head.
The obvious?
Looking at them.
Ah,
he said. At any rate, I now feel far more comfortable.
Because I'm no longer perfect.
You're still terribly close to it, but you're no longer the handsomest man I've ever seen, she lied.
I feel as though I should be insulted, but I shall get past that. Out of curiosity, who has usurped my throne?
No one. If anything, the scar makes you more handsome. But this was not the kind of man one said that to. Technically, he had the throne before you. He's simply reclaimed it.
I'll thank you for a name, Lady Felicity.
What did you call him before? My moth. He went utterly still for a moment, not long enough for an ordinary person to notice. Felicity noticed. I thought you would have expected it, she said, her tone scoffing. What's with your offer to win him for me?
The offer still stands. Oh, I don't find the Duke handsome. At all.
We needn't debate the point. The man is empirically attractive.
He said, seemingly unconvinced. Tell me why you lied.
Tell me why you're so willing to help me fix it. He held her gaze for a long moment.
Would you believe I'm a good Samaritan?
No. Why were you outside Marwick's ball? What is he to you? He lifted one shoulder. Let it drop.
Tell me why you don't think he'd be thrilled to find himself a fiance to you.
She smirked. First, he hasn't any idea who I am. One side of his mouth twitched, and she wondered what it would be like to receive the full force of his smile. Putting the wild thought to the side, she added, And, as I said, exceedingly handsome men have no use for me.
That's not what you said.
the man answered.
You said you weren't sure of the use for exceedingly handsome men.
She thought for a moment. Both statements are true.
Why would you think Marwick would have no use for you?
She frowned.